This is Mike Corey from ESPN, and you're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome in to the Sports Objective right here under the lights on a Tuesday night. Ladies and gentlemen, the best video game player I know, all the way from LaGrange, is Kyle Barber. How are you, man?
And if you're calling me the best video game player, you know you have got to be speaking of retro games. I'm the best retro video game player you know. If it's anything modern, I suck at it immortally. But anyway, what's going on, fellas?
Hey, Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, dude?
I've been pretty crazy this afternoon, Riley. It's a little sick under the weather, and been a crazy night so far, but very excited to talk to a guy we have on tonight, a guy who, back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, the only Pirate to do that in the last 30 years with the exception of Junior Smith. Welcome to the show, Dontavious Cooper.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it, man. Appreciate you guys for having me so much. It's good to actually be talking to some Pirate fans and Pirate people who know the game and know football and know the history of you know what all of us have loved and fell in love with over these years. So it's definitely good to be here, man. I appreciate y'all for having me.
Absolutely. You know, Coop, when we had started the show, one of the things, one of our objectives, no pun intended, was to have former players on. In fact, we have one regular now, Matt Semenza, former linebacker for Steve Logan. But one of the things we wanted to do is to honor you guys, because there's a lot of men and women who've played Pirate sports over the years that maybe don't get the credit they deserve, or your particular case, we're celebrating. I mean, what a legacy, Pirate football. We've had so many great players. In your particular case, we wanted to talk to refresh. Maybe they're new Pirate fans, or maybe fans have forgotten. Talk about your path to becoming a Pirate.
Man, my path to becoming a Pirate, it was weird. I remember being asleep on my beanbag one night in my dorm room, and I had my food. I had just got through eating. I had some Hot Pockets and stuff right next to me, and my cell phone went to ringing. And I missed the call. I wake up again maybe a few minutes or so later and see that it's a phone call from Lubbock, Texas. And I don't know anybody from Lubbock, Texas, but I do know that Texas Tech is in Lubbock, Texas. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe this is Texas Tech giving me a call. So I look at my voicemails, and it's a call from a guy named Lincoln Riley, and he's the offensive coordinator at East Carolina. And sure enough, I give him a call back, and he tells me that, we're very interested in you. We like what you can do, and if you can get up in the morning in time, you know, quick enough to get over to your counselor and everybody, you know, to get your transcript sent off to us, we want to offer you a full scholarship. And I immediately, okay, say nothing. You don't need to say anything else. I get off the phone. I call my dad. I call my brother. We talk about it. My mom, she's telling me I should do it just yet because she don't, you know, because it's just a weird situation and how it happened like the day before signing day. And so like that next morning, I was supposed to be signing with Murray State. And We get up, we make everything happen. I speak to coach, and he sends me the scholarship, and I sign the next morning. I take a visit that weekend, and I fell in love with the purple and gold, man. I fell in love with the purple and gold. Everything about it, Coach Ruff, the people, the stadium, I got to see everything, and yeah, it ain't no other place that I feel like I should have ended up.
Now, Coop, was Murray State recruiting you as running back or quarterback or what?
They were recruiting me as a quarterback, man. They wanted me to come in and start quarterback.
Okay, and you just liked the opportunity of playing at the FBS level, even though you weren't going to play quarterback?
Definitely. Yeah, it was – I spoke with my head coach, and I had spoke with the coaches from Murray State, you know, about what was happening there. And, you know, they were giving me feedback as much as saying, you know, well, man, we don't think, you know, we understand, you know, it's an opportunity and, you know, it's a good opportunity for you. But, you know, we really think that it would be best, you know, in your best interest to come with us because we feel like you can start right now. And if you go to East Carolina, it ain't no, we don't think, you know, they're going to give you the chance to start. We think that, you know, you're going to be on the bench and they just want to use you for depth. You know, they want to add you as an extra body. And I'm like, man, I have never been the guy that shies away from competition. So I'm coming full force and I needed to make that known. Like I'm coming to play ball regardless of any place that I'm going, Division 1, Division 2, or Division 3, I'll have to compete for my place. So I made a decision to go to East Carolina to fight for a job, you know, as opposed to, I guess, just being handed, you know, a job.
Yeah, that's a great attitude to have, and it's one that I wish more players embrace, particularly when they're on the depth chart. Now with the transfer portal, I think if you ain't starting after year one, maybe year two, everybody wants to transfer now. And, you know, I wish more players shared your sentiment of not minding fighting for something. Had you ever played running back? Were you always a quarterback? I'm sure at some point you had played running back.
I actually played quarterback my entire life. The last time that I played running back before playing at East Carolina was in flag football, and I was like 6, maybe 5 or 6 years old.
Wow,
that's awesome.
Because my dad, he was my little league coach. And he, you know, he was the quarterback in my hometown. So naturally, you know, everybody else thought the same thing, and I'm pretty sure he had the same idea. So he groomed me into being a quarterback. Pee-wees, midgets, you know, all of Little League. And when I made it to middle school in 7th and 8th grade, I was still a quarterback. And 9th grade, coming into my freshman year, I was a backup quarterback, and by the 10th grade year, I was starting quarterback. I started all the way through my high school career, and I was recruited as a quarterback, and that's how it all started, man. It's so crazy.
Good when you got here, the captain, Shane Carden, was quarterback. But did you ever try to talk Lincoln Riley into putting in a package for you to do some wildcat and maybe work some passes in out of it?
Honestly, I was afraid that he was thinking that, man. I didn't want to throw the ball. I really didn't. I didn't want to throw the ball at all. I was kind of feeling like my shoulder wasn't ready, and I hadn't been practicing it. You know, I hadn't thrown a football. When he told me that I was supposed to have been playing running back, I was like, yeah, okay, cool. I'm catching balls from the rest of this point on. I will not throw another football. So, yeah, I wasn't planning on it. But, he ended up incorporating the Wildcat. And, you know, we ran a couple passes at practice and stuff. But, yeah, we never did it in the game.
Yeah, I didn't remember you guys doing it in the game.
Yeah. Because we didn't remember we were in the bowl game and they had us in the Wildcat. Well, not necessarily the Wildcat, but – you know, the set where Shane stands right between us and I get the ball, you know, on the direct snap. It was more of those.
Yeah, who was it that threw the touchdown pass to Carden in the bowl game?
Cam Worthy.
Okay, it was Worthy. That's right.
Now, Coop, talk about that recruitment to an offense. You know, Lincoln Riley, obviously very young but proven offensive coordinator. You know, he had a couple years under his belt prior to your arrival. But, you know, coming from that Mike Leach offense where they didn't run the ball a whole lot, but Lincoln, you know, he progressively ran the ball more and more, and we had a lot of success, as you showed, you know, running for 1,000-plus yards in 2 consecutive seasons.
Yes. What'd you ask me? I'm sorry.
Just talk about, you know, that recruitment to an offense that historically hadn't run the ball a whole lot, but Lincoln Riley was placing more and more of an emphasis on it.
Oh man, it was a good feeling, like, because in a way, you know, I mean, not selfishly, but, and you know, everybody want to have the ball in their hands on the offense, you know, and it, I mean, when you feel like you can do it, you know. When you know you have the ability to make plays, you want the ball in your hand. So the fact that he was feeling like, you know, I would like to have the ball in his hands, I guess, you know, I feel like it was more of him saying that he wanted me to have the ball in my hands, not necessarily just running the ball, but it was, you know, I wanted to have the ball in my hands. You know what I mean? Like, we ran the ball. And the time that, I mean, from what I remember, it seemed that when I was in the game, we did run the ball a good amount of times. I rarely even remember too many times that I have, you know, anything less than 15 carries, you know what I'm saying, if I was playing. So it was a trip, and it was like, dang, okay, I know it. East Carolina for being a pass team, air raid team, and now in a way it's almost like he's kind of putting, you know, just like you said, an emphasis on running the ball, and I'm wondering why, you know, in a lot of ways, but I never questioned my ability. I never questioned God, you know, judgment and what he's done in my life. So everything, you know, that's happened, I feel like happened for a reason, man.
Yeah, and you know, Coop, I think you were perfect in that offense. I mean, when you look back at that air raid style, we would have the extremely wide splits with the offensive linemen. We had, you know, very tall, lengthy offensive linemen to sort of fit that system. And you were sort of the perfect back because you would sort of get in behind those blockers and just find those creases. And, you know, like we said before the show, you were just very shifty, had a knack for, you know, finding a crease and taking advantage of it. So I think that system was great for you. I think you could have played in any system. So honestly, but question for you, when you first got to campus, you know, you meet Lincoln Riley for the first time, he was probably, I'm guessing he was maybe 29 years old, somewhere in that area.
Yeah.
Do you have any sense, you know, after being around him for a few practices, do you have any sense just how special of a coach he was about to become?
I honestly felt like he was special just because of what he had done with me. You know what I mean? I'm like, what coach wants to recruit a quarterback to come and play running back? You know what I mean? Like, that's just weird in itself, you know what I'm saying? So for him to actually see something in me made me see something in him, you know what I mean? It was like, wow, what is making him, you know, see what he's seeing in me, you know, to even want to do that? And so, I mean, I guess his ideology behind football is so deep, you know what I mean? Whatever he comes, you know, whatever he can really bring to his brain, he can actually do it. And I mean, I that goes with play calling and, you know, anything else also. I mean, but as far as leadership goes, man, it ain't nobody. I mean, I can run through a brick wall for him.
Yeah. And I think that's what that philosophy of, you know, maintaining the running game within that air raid, I think, is what made it so special during those years, because it made you, you know, multidimensional as an offense, and your ability to, you know, you had 1,000-yard seasons here. So, I mean, when you can run the ball like that and then also have that kind of a you know, up-tempo throwing system, it's virtually impossible to be stopped. And those are some really fun offenses.
Yeah. I said that a lot. I used to think about us playing against all types of teams and what it would actually be, you know, playing against an SEC team or, you know, just any other team that, you know, everybody, you know, had deemed, you know, such and such or whatever one or however it was at the time. And I was just thinking, I'm like, man, the shape we're in, you know, as much as we run, I don't know too many people that would be able to keep up with us like that. And being able to stretch the field would be the main thing. You know, if we could actually get people to stretch the field and you know, make the DBs back up and ease up a little more. But other than that, man, I felt like we could have beat just about anybody, honestly.
We talked about before we went live when you kind of emerged on the scene with that UTEP game. Talk if you will about that game for the audience and you know, Reggie Bullock getting injured at the beginning of the game and you kind of stepping in and never really looking back.
Yeah. So the UTEP game, man, it was I think maybe the fifth game of the season, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was like game five. So we come into that full week, you know, off of a good game plan and expecting a good football night, and out of nowhere the rain is just crazy, like it's torrential downpour almost, and almost the whole game. And the first play of the game, you know, my good friend Reggie Bullock, you know, he was back deep on kick return, and he got hurt. You know, he got injured, and it was so you know, just wild, because he got a concussion, and it was one of those things where it's like, you know, how did that just happen? And me being on the sideline, not expecting anything like that to happen in the first play of the game, I get my number called. I get my name called anyway. Coach Dahl turns around, he's like, Coop. Cooper, let's go. And I'm like, okay, all right, here we go. So I'm on the field, and I just remember, you know, just thinking of all the times before where this is all that I've been thinking about. This is what I've been waiting for. This is what I've been preparing for. I remember being so pissed off during the Southern Miss game when we played Southern Miss, I think the week before, because I had got in late. You know, I felt like, you know, you, as a player, you confident in your abilities and you confident in yourself. And, you know, humbleness is everything to me. And it was starting to reach its level at that point for me, though. I was like, man, I want to play. I want to be on the field. Like, I got to get on the field. And just being in that Southern Miss game, I remember getting in late. And I remember doing some good things, and I remember just being so mad because the point of the time that I got into the game, I think. And at that point, though, coming back to the UTEP game, starting that game, that being my first game, and it being so crazy to come in off of my buddy being hurt, and I think it was one of the craziest moments ever, but actually being, you know, one of my best performances, you know, as a running back, you know, while playing at East Carolina. It was the night that the Coop chant started. It was, you know, the night that I think I scored my first touchdown, if I'm not mistaken. I feel like that might have been the night I scored my first touchdown. And it was so trippy, man. It was like, it's time. It's time for everything that I've been waiting for. And yeah, I wish I could rewind it all back sometime.
I bet you did. That you mentioned the
Coop. We do too.
And I remember you mentioned the Coop chant, and I remember after that game, hearing an interview, or it may have even actually been an interview with Shane Carden, saying that you went up to him and said, "Why are they booing? We're doing good." And Shane said, "They ain't booing, you can't shoot."
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. I thought that they were booing, man. I'm like, what's happening right now? So I turn. I'm like, bro, what's happening? Why are they booing? What's going on? And he's like, bro, they not booing, bro. They chanting your name. I'm like, huh? I'm like, what? I'm like, nah, that ain't what's happening right now. Not my first game here, bro. Nah, that ain't what's happening right now. But yeah, that's what was happening. And I remember Mikael Brooks also too, being like, he was like, bro, you heard us, right? And I'm like, no. He said, yeah, man, we started that. We were on the sideline. We just started yelling it out. And the whole crowd just started taking it in with us. So, yeah. So, shout out to Mikael Brooks and the defensive line, because I think they played a lot of the role in starting the Coop chant at East Carolina also.
Coop, one thing I like to ask all the former players that come on this show, I always think it's interesting. You know, is there that one game, you know, when you think back to your college career, is that one game out that your mind goes to as sort of your, you know, your greatest memory?
Ooh, I bet. Say it one more time. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know, so I was saying is when you think back to your college career, you know, does your mind kind of take you to one game in particular that's your best memory of all the games you played in?
It's a little weird when I think about it, because anytime I think about football, I think about my last game. So I instantly go to the Ohio game. Okay. But I can remember moments that you know were great, and I can remember moments that just sucked though. You know, like, oh my gosh, like I can't believe this is happening, and I can remember the moments that were just like, yeah, we arrived. But like the moment losing to Lafayette, that wasn't a game we were supposed to lose. Losing to Tulane in New Orleans, that wasn't the game we were supposed to lose. Losing to Marshall in Marshall, that wasn't the game we were supposed to lose. I don't think we were supposed to lose the first year in North Carolina when they had Geo. I don't even think we were supposed to lose that game. But we lost. But the ups came. Oh, and the Virginia Tech game. Oh my gosh, that game. We weren't supposed to lose that game either. What was it? 16-6, something like that. Like
15-10.
16-10.
15. Yeah, 15-10.
Man, we weren't supposed to lose that game. And it was like, I just remember after that, you know, a lot of the ups being
North Carolina.
I think like the ups coming after that we game. Got our black jerseys to me seemed like. Say it again.
So North Carolina 2 weeks after that Virginia Tech game?
North Carolina 2 weeks after that. And everything just, yeah, after when we, like that year when we got our jerseys, like the new jerseys and stuff like that, it was a whole different bounce in our step, like after getting our jerseys. I think, I remember when Justin Hardy walked into the locker room with our brand new black jerseys on, and we didn't even expect it. We didn't know if we were getting them or anything like that. And everything after that was just an up, you know what I'm saying? But coming into that North Carolina game, and we knew that we were wearing our black jerseys. That was a weird attitude to have going in North Carolina. It was like, yeah, we coming for their funeral. That's what it felt like. It was like, we coming for your funeral. Y'all know that, right? This is not what y'all finna have. This is not the regular game. Coach just told us we can go all black in Chapel Hill. This ain't finna be pretty. This ain't no nice game. We ain't being cordial. We ain't having fun, friends. None of that. We about to tear off in some ass tonight, and that's how we were feeling. So, we handled that business playing against North Carolina, and then being able to basically take over the state and beat in North Carolina State. Yeah, that was like the icing on the cake.
It always seemed like you stepped up in big games. It always seemed like you had big games in big games. You had a big game against Carolina. You had a big game in the bowl game against Ohio. I don't remember what you did against NC State. Do you remember what your yards were against NC State in 13?
I think I had 130 or something like that, like 130 yards, okay. Maybe 121 yards or something like that.
I knew you had a good day. Yeah, I think you had a good day, but for some reason that game, I don't remember that NC State game as vivid as I do a lot of the other ones. I remember the Pirates. And it could be that there was so much around it. We beat NC State. We were big. I remember they came back late. It could be, you know, after that was the Marshall game, and then after the Marshall game was the Ohio game. Right. So you would think the NC State game would stick out, but for some reason that particular year it doesn't. I was just glad we beat them. And I remember Dave Doran after it said it was the worst loss in his coaching history.
Golly. I remember how loud it was. I remember how loud it was with all the fans being in there.
Yeah, now that you say that, yes.
That was like the main – that's probably the main thing that I remember of how loud it being in that stadium and it now, being purple and gold.
All right here in the purple.
I was so amped up for that. That was amazing.
That was one of the things I remember about that game, Coop, is the fact that wasn't the fourth quarter when there was basically – pretty much just Pirate fans, and you heard the purple gold cheer the whole fourth quarter. That's what I remember the most about that game.
It was nobody left. Seemed like it seemed like you only saw. I think I remember them having red seats or something like that in the stand. But I remember seeing like a couple red seats and a lot of purple and gold still being up there somewhere.
The following week, and you talked about earlier games that you. That are bad memories, the Marshall game. To me, that game always sat up. It was just a terrible setup for that game. You beat North Carolina State in a huge rivalry game. You got a short week. You got to go travel to Huntington, West Virginia, a tough place to play. You got to play on Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, for like a 12 noon kickoff. If I remember right, Marshall might even have had an off week while we were playing NC State.
Yeah, and I think so.
It was just set up to lose, and I remember just you could almost see it coming. Do you feel like y'all came out flat for that game?
I feel like I don't know if we underestimated the cold or something. Like I don't know, man. It did feel a little flat though. I can honestly say that it was. I don't know. I hate to say that, you know. Hotel things and stuff like that play a role in somebody's, you know, football night, or, I mean, a football game or something like that. But it was just some weird things going on being in Huntington, man. The vibe was weird when we got there. You know, the hotel that we stayed in would kind of throw it off. I'm like, you know, but it is what it is. I feel like being at the game, I'm not sure if we just couldn't get, you know, couldn't get going or what it was, but it was something in the air that we just, as a team, we just really didn't start clicking, you know. I think we may have played the first quarter decent or so, and after that, we just kind of fell into a slump that we couldn't come out of.
Hey, Coop, did you, when you're talking about motels, was like the Bates Motel, like from Psycho, or what? I mean, what in the world? Tell us about
that. You would have thought that, man. If you would, like the places that we, you know, like I said, I hate to sound like the guy who thinks about that type of thing, you know, when it comes to playing football. But man, when I mean we ran, you know, our walkthroughs and, you know, different things like that, either outside or inside of some type of convention center or something, kind of, you know, carpeted or whatnot. For this particular this particular trip, we in this Adams family looking hotel. It's dim. The lights are looking weird. I promise, man, I can't even make this stuff up. If you saw the room that we were running our game plan in, man. You probably wonder what we were doing now, really. Like it was crazy.
Did the lights like have that strobe effect? You know what I'm talking about? Like you see in horror movies from the 70s, like it's got almost like, yeah.
Yeah, bro, it did. I can't tell you no lie. I can't even tell you no lie. It had a little weird flicker going on. We walked in, it kind of smelled like a meat market. I'm like, bro, I don't know what's happening. But yeah, I don't know if we're in the right place to be right now, man. I'm looking at BT Overton like, hey, are you sure we come here? This is where we're supposed to be staying and stuff like this, man. And that was a weird night.
That's funny. It was like they had, like, the back in the day, growing up as a kid. You guys are probably too young. Maybe some men may know, but magic fingers, you put quarters in the in this machine and all of a sudden your bed started bouncing. And then they have like mirrors on the wall, you know, like the free HBO, free local calls back in the day, one of those roadside motels. I don't know. But, you know, it's funny, Coop, but we've had guys, we've had coaches, we've had players, and we don't mean any disrespect. We do love the folks from Marshall from the, obviously, unfortunately, we have the tie from the plane crash, but we've had, I don't know how many people, former players and coaches, have said one of their worst experiences, guys, am I wrong on that, was going to play at Marshall. Remember that?
I remember, what's his name? I can't think of his name right now. The guy that used to be the team minister, ran Christian Fellowship. Come out, guys.
Chuck.
Yeah, I remember him, Chuck. I remember, what was his last name?
Chuck Young.
I remember Chuck Young saying he hated going to Huntington and up the market.
Oh, the chapel, Chuck. Yeah, I remember Chuck, yeah.
Yeah, he hated it. He hated it. Maybe for it sounded like for similar reasons you did, that the accommodations never met his standards.
I can't even. I don't know. You know, I won't disrespect, you know, West Virginia by no means. But man, my first experience in West Virginia wasn't a good one. And I'm like, yeah, I might need to go to some different places or see some type of different scenery, because if I had to describe somebody to West Virginia, I mean, if I had to describe West Virginia to somebody, I probably would. I really probably wow. would.
Hey, did you happen to see Mothman?
You say Mothman?
Mothman. It's an urban legend around Huntington, West Virginia, about this big creature called Mothman.
What about the?
I'm serious.
That's a good movie. Very good movie.
Oh, yeah, that comes from an urban legend, Matt. But I know they made a movie about it. Yeah, but that comes from an urban legend that it's the Huntington area and a big creature, and yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, okay. The Mothman Prophecies. I think Richard Gere was in that movie, if I'm not mistaken. The movie.
Okay.
What about what about the movie Wrong Turn? Wasn't that a horror movie about?
That's also in West Virginia. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
That's so Coop, crazy.
Coop, you're going. Hey, Coop, you're going. You guys took a wrong turn.
Right, man. That's what happened. See,
that's an awesome movie, by the way. Yeah. I love that movie. Not to get off track.
I'm going with
Kane, ain't it?
No, you're talking about the movie. The movie with Kane is
See No
oh,
Evil.
Oh God, you See No Evil. Yes.
Yeah. That's
I yeah. Current mayor of Knoxville, by the way, Glenn Jacobs, aka Kane.
Really?
Yeah. Kane is now the mayor of Knoxville.
Bro.
The big red machine.
Yeah. That's funny. I need to tell my brother that. He's a big wrestling fan. I need to tell him that.
Yeah, let him know.
That's crazy.
We'll have to get your brother on to talk wrestling sometime.
Yes, sir. He, when it comes to wrestling, man, oh my God, he'll talk wrestling with you all day, it's so funny. We were just talking about the old days of watching WCW when we used to watch the Wolfpack, and I remember the time that Master P came on to WCW. And he was, you know, being a rapper and being on WCW, that was the craziest thing I ever saw. And we were just tripping out about that. But I also remember being in Wild Adventures and in Valdosta, Georgia, and the wrestlers came down to Valdosta. I got to meet Booker T, and I got to ask him what Sting's real name was, which I found out was Steve Sting Borden.
Yeah, Steve Borden. WCW was based out of Atlanta, so a lot of ties to Georgia. And up until the point where Hogan came in and the NWO was formed, They ran a lot in Georgia. They did a lot of tapings in Atlanta, in the surrounding area, Columbus.
Yeah, it was cheap for them to do those house shows, but then they got to a point where they get too off track, but where they stopped doing house shows because they were losing so much money.
Yeah, that was, okay. We could get deep in the weeds about WCW, but that's probably a podcast for a different
time. Yeah, you see where Ric Flair congratulated Georgia? He was pulling for the Bulldogs last night. He said that on social media today. So.
Oh man, no, I did. That's wild. I remember
who was your team
playing South Carolina and Ric Flair being at the game and him saying "woo" over the stadium like so many times when they got a first down or something.
Yeah, he was good friends with Spurrier.
Yeah, that was wild.
Coop, did you grow up a wrestling fan at all?
Yes, I did, actually. Like I said, I was a huge Sting fan. Like, he was probably my favorite wrestler for forever. And after a while, I think when we, you know, the tie kind of switched over to WWF and seeing all of the cruiserweights that, you know, did all of the high-flying things and stuff like that off of the high rope, I mean, off of the ropes. I was a big Hardy. I was a Hardy Boy fan.
Okay.
Yeah, so the High Flyers and the S.A. Rios and all those guys, yeah, I used to love seeing guys jump off the top rope. I was a big, what is his name? Billy Kidman, man. Billy Kidman.
Oh, Kidman.
I was a big Billy Kidman fan, man. The 7 year itch, man. Yeah, man. I used to like Billy Kidman. Yeah,
Billy Kidman's greatest accomplishment is somehow he married Tori Wilson. You remember Tori Wilson? that was Kidman's greatest accomplishment.
Hey Kyle, that's something to be proud of, brother.
That's something to be proud of right there, man.
Absolutely not. You know, when you said you're a big Hardy Boys fan, I thought you were going to go with Rey Mysterio Jr. Okay. You were talking about coming off top rope and stuff. Yeah. But
I like
Rey. Yeah. Hardy Boys are a couple of North Carolina boys. I've had a chance to meet Jeff several times. Really? And Jeff is a different cat, but he's a nice guy.
Okay.
What's different about him?
Jeff's a different cat. That's all. Jeff is just he goes to the beat of his own drummer.
Okay.
Let me put it to you like this. Jeff knows where all the good drugs are, okay?
I knew it. Once you said that, I knew what you were saying. Yeah. Right. Can we talk about...
Oh, I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask about being a former player. We were talking about the bowl games and stuff. Matt's a former player who played in the bowl game. I'm trying really hard to move past it, but I just feel really bad for the seniors this year that didn't get a chance to play in the Military Bowl, and just want to get your thoughts on that and about maybe we can talk a little bit about your bowl experiences now that we're after the first of the year and we just had the national championship game last night.
That's a bad thing to have happen to some guys who really deserve to be on the field, you know, and who put it all on the line to have a winning season. You know what I'm saying? Like to make it to the bowl game. You know what I'm saying? It's no easy feat. You know, it's hard work to put yourself, you know, behind something and to actually stand up for everything within a 53-man roster, I'm not even sure, but however many people that's on the football team, I think that is messed up though, man. It's a bad. I can't even put it in words how that has to feel, not being able to play your last game as a senior. You know what I'm saying? That's messed up, man. It's messed up. Yeah. And it's understood for what the reasons are and whatnot, but it's just a bad time, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, let's face it, Coop. Boston College was – they were scared. They were scared. They didn't want it. They bailed out, and it was an unfortunate situation, to say the least. So I agree with you. But Coop, I wanted to ask you, you know, it's funny. You know, we were talking a little bit before about the offensive scheme you played in. I remember Coach Ruff used to always say that was – East Carolina's offense, you know, when referring to the air raid, he would say, this is East Carolina's offense. Look at our offense now. It's literally polar opposite from what you were running. You know, when you were there, it's more of a physical, you know, sort of, you know, less tempo, more of a ground and pound type attack, you know, where we want to kind of want to run the ball first. Have you had a chance to watch a lot of the games? You know, I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts on this year's team and how you think they're
developing. Honestly, no. I really don't watch much football as you would think, because for me, it doesn't really make me feel good. You know, it don't make me feel bad, but it don't make me feel great not being on the field anymore. And it's just a weird feeling to watch football at certain points. You know, I can kind of watch a big game every now and again, but in a way, it's just like, I hardly ever get up for it. And it's just not something I don't know why, but it's just a feeling that I've had since not being able to be on the field anymore.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Coop, because it honestly, when I was done playing football, it took me about probably a good 8 to 10 years before I had any interest in watching it. You know, and then finally, you kind of at some point you get it out of your system a little bit and you kind of pick it up again. But it's funny you say that, because I do think that's pretty common for a lot of guys, because you miss playing so much.
Right.
You know, to sit around and watch it on TV, it's almost painful. Like, damn, I want to be out there playing.
Yeah, man.
So I get it. I get what you're saying.
Definitely. I mean, I get to talk to Breon. You know, I talked to Breon. When Justin was playing. I used to call and talk to Justin every now and again and just, you know, tap his head, honestly, about workouts and different things like that. But I talked to Breon a lot while he was across seas and, you know, playing ball across seas. And, you know, just to get, you know, anything about football. You know, I that's probably the only person that I really would talk to about football. And, it's just – nothing that I can really – I don't know why, man. I really don't. It's weird. It's weird.
You make a great point, though. As someone who's been on the stage since I was 12 years old as an actor, in addition to – obviously, I wasn't at the level you guys were playing sports. But there is something to be said that when you love to perform, like, for example, my friends that were in a local show, the version of – Sound of Music, because of COVID, they had to wait almost 2 years to do the show, right? And I'm up there going, and I'm watching them, and I'm really proud of them, but I was sitting there in the audience going, man, I wish I were up there on the stage. It didn't, you know, it just, I can relate to that, how you're watching, in other words, you're watching the game, instead of performing, you're watching, and you want to be on the stage so bad, or this particular case, want to be on the field so bad.
Definitely. That's how I feel when I'm watching dirty movies.
Well,
like, damn, I wish I was performing.
Well, I tried to have a nice moment and you took it there, man. Is that locker room talk, Coop? Semenza, is that locker room talk?
No, that's better than my locker room talk. I couldn't have came up with nothing like that. That was too sweet. That was sweet.
I couldn't even repeat our locker room talk. You know, I'd get us in trouble if I started repeating our locker room talk back in the day. But Kyle definitely has a way with, with humor. So no doubt about it.
Yeah, I'm good with something. Coop, what do you miss most about East Carolina? Obviously, you talked about you miss playing, and you miss football in general. But besides playing the game of football, what do you miss most about East Carolina?
What do I miss about East Carolina, man? I think I just miss my brothers, man. I think I just miss my brothers. Like, it's so funny to think about being in different locker rooms, you know, all of your career, and while playing at these different, you know, these various places, you meet all these people, you know, you run into these different people, and you know, you hang out with a bunch of different people, and you know, you find your own people that you become cool with, and that was like everybody with me at East Carolina though. And when I was at Southwest, you know, it was a few guys that I was, you know, that I was pretty cool with. I mean, I would like to think myself as a good leader. So as far as that, I was, you know, everybody was okay with me as a good leader and that type of thing at Southwest. But I only hung with a couple of people while I was there. But at East Carolina, it seemed as if anybody and everybody I could be cool with. I could hang out with. You know, I remember hanging out with Trent Tignor so many times, you know, and him actually being, you know, one of my ways to go to Chuck Young's house for chapel and things like that sometimes. And being around Trent, I remember him inviting me to a church that him and his girlfriend or somebody. I think him and Ike Harris ended up going, and Trey Robertson, all of us ended up going to church, to a church that Trent went to. I mean, it was just amazing, man, that the people that you meet, you know. And I think that would probably be the main thing that I miss most, because we did everything together. We played ball together. We hung out together. If there was a party that we were going to, we were all going together. If there was, you know, anything that was happening, we were all going together. You know, even the crazy accident that happened, you know, when we were, when the guys were headed to football practice that morning, you know what I mean? You know,
on the ice. Together.
Yeah, on the ice, you know what I'm saying? We always together, man. And I think that's probably what I miss more than anything, is just the camaraderie. Being able to just to know that my brother over there, and you know, he know I'm over here too.
Yeah, you're right, Coop, about when being a student, it was funny how we talk about this all the time. I'm glad that I went to East Carolina, and the reason I am is that you'd be walking on campus and everybody was friendly to everyone. There was not really, I didn't experience, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't experience like cliques or like certain people. It didn't matter, all walks of life. Everybody was friendly. I think it was like, I don't know, like the special bond we had. And it was definitely where I felt very comfortable and walking up and down a campus, because everybody was friendly, talking to each other. Just really cool. Especially I was there when we were winning a lot in football and baseball. So that helped out a lot. And we even went to a March Madness in 1993. Thank you very much. Been a long time. But anyway, that was a great, right, Bubba?
Yeah. And Coop, one of the things I wanted to, you know, get your thoughts on, I know you're aware of it, or at least I'm pretty sure I saw you chime in on social media, you know, a Georgia boy, Keaton Mitchell, became the first East Carolina running back to rush for 1,000 yards since you did back in 2013.
Yes, sir.
What are your thoughts on Keaton Mitchell? You know, tremendously fast, and he was a, you know, tremendous asset to the program this year. And the great news is that if he so chooses, he still has 3 years remaining.
Man, I think all I can do is be happy as an East Carolina fan, as a fan of the game, and you know, as a Georgia boy, you know what I mean? I know he's gonna represent, I know he's gonna do everything that he's supposed to do. I mean, when you come in and you still have, I mean, when you have the productivity that you have, you know, out of this, you know, this soon of a time period, man, I mean, the sky's the limit. So I can only pray that his mindset is, you know, still just let's get better. You know what I mean? Because it's, I mean, it's so easy to get complacent. It's so easy to let, you know, small things that seem big at the moment, you know, rattle the cage a little bit. And I hope that, you know, he's got a good support system around him and people keeping his head, you know, straight, you know, so he can rush for another 1,000 yards and be the next consecutive, you know, and go ahead and try to at least take that title away from him.
And you mentioned Breon Allen, you know, with Breon's size and his speed as well. So I do see some similarities between Keaton Mitchell and Breon Allen.
Oh yeah, man, definitely, definitely. Feet work, man, feet work. That's what we pride ourselves on. I think more than me and Breon, if we want to see you fall on your face. You know, I've never been the guy that cannot run, you know, everybody anyway. So I relied on my feet. And I think that when you can put somebody, when it's one-on-one with you and another guy in the middle of the field, if it's one-on-two with you and two guys in the middle of the field, it's going to be hard. You know what I'm saying? It's going to be hard to stop me. It's going to be hard to stop Bree. It's going to be hard to stop Keith Milton. And that's the type of running back that he is. That's the type of running back that I've seen. And, man, that's the type of running back that I love to watch.
And, Coop, a few minutes ago, you know, kind of going back to Dave's question about the bowls in 2012 and 2013, obviously 2012, the New Orleans Bowl against Louisiana Lafayette, or Louisiana as they like to go by, and you know, obviously in 2013, Ohio down in Tampa, St. Pete. But just what are your memories from those bowl trips outside of the games themselves, but you know, some of the bowl events, and you know, what type of gift suites, I guess they call it, you know, what type of swag did you guys get on those two trips?
Man, dang, what do we get? I remember getting a real cool fossil, like a black fossil watch, when we went to New Orleans. They gave us some type of tablet or something like that. I remember having, and I can't tell you what that tablet is right now, but yeah, they gave it, and we had some pretty nice track, like our track units and things like that were pretty cool. Some good shades, some Oakley shades, and some Oakley book bags and some things like that. I remember being at home though, because everybody, you know, at least if you hadn't been, you know, you probably wasn't there to, you know, there alone to do much of anything. But I had been there, man. I've been here the whole time, like right before I moved to North Carolina. So I know every little crevice that there is to know in New Orleans and through Mississippi and around this way. My girlfriend at that time, she was from Kenner, Louisiana. So everything about, you know, where we were, yeah, I was actually with the team, you know, during the time that we had to be. And I was with her and her family, you know, meeting up with them and hanging out with them a little during the night of the game.
And here recently, I heard one of the members of another member of the local media talking about the belly flop contest at the Beef O'Brady's Bowl. What do you recall about that?
The Beef O'Brady Bowl belly flops. Oh my gosh. That was so crazy. Oh man, that was a crazy day. Oh, that was a crazy day. So it was so many people around that pool, man. It was so many people around that pool. And it was just, you know, both teams, everybody just, you know, having a good time. And, of course, competitors going to find a way to be competitive. And we finding them in belly flopping. And, golly, oh, my God. That was probably one of the funnest days that I had at ECU. Probably other than the snow day that we had at ECU that was just random out of nowhere. we had a random snow day, and we were just, you know, all the guys were having snow fights outside. But that might have been like the funnest experience at ECU, being there with all the guys, and even being there with another team, and just, you know, just having a wild time at a bowl event. That was crazy. That was crazy. I don't really remember what we had in Ohio for the bowl. I don't really remember what we had down there at all, honestly.
You mean as far as the bowl gifts and so forth?
Yeah. I just remember the rain. That's all I remember. I remember the rain, bro.
Yeah. And I remember, I guess, Shane, and then I'm trying to remember who else, maybe one of the offensive linemen, setting up Coach Ruff for the Gatorade bath.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
Man, but,
I miss Big Guy, man.
Yeah, it's so weird now that Coach Russ he's a special assistant to Coach Dorn at NC State.
All right, that's up, man. Yeah. It's a trip, but, man. It's a trip, man. All I can do is pray that, you know, that he's good. I hadn't talked to him in a long time, you know. I hope he's well, and as much love and always respect from here, for sure.
Now, it's going to be very interesting to see how Coach Riley does out at USC.
Man, I was talking to one of my buddies about that, and I never even found out. He told me, he was like, "Bro, did you know Link went to USC?" And I was like, "No, when did that happen?" He said, "Yeah, I'm thinking it just now because he was telling me when it happened." And so my brother, being a USC fan from Georgia, which is weird, but he was a huge USC fan back in the day and still is. But it's so wild to think that someone that I know, you know, because it's a trip for me whenever you go through. Being from that small town and being in the little high school and going to the small junior college and, you know, never really knowing if you were going to East Carolina, until you went to East Carolina. And so in a lot of ways, looking at Coach Lincoln, man, it's like, dang, man. Like, it's a trip that I even know the guy a lot of the time. It's like, he's going to Southern Cal? Oh, man, that's a trip. But, yeah, that's wild. One of the most prestigious colleges in the United States, and it's a trip.
And the highest-paid coach in college football now.
Straight up.
Yep.
Straight up.
Yeah, making a lot of money. Bubba, you remember what his contract is?
I don't recall exactly.
It's a lot. It was something crazy. Like it's
five years,
$100 million.
$100 million.
It was 100 or 110.
Yep.
It's 110.
110 for 5 years.
Coop, I'm not sure how up to speed you are on like the NIL and players can get paid now and things have changed so much. You ever feel like you're about 12 years too late?
Yeah, bro. I think about that like every other day now, probably more than I'm like, wow. Yeah, you know what that could have been, but yeah. Salute to the guys who get the experience though, man. I don't think it's wrong, that's for sure. That is for sure. And that's crazy. That's crazy.
No doubt. Coop, tell people, as far as I know, you said you're living in Augusta. What are you up to now?
Savannah, bro. Savannah.
I'm sorry. I have Augusta on my mind. I knew that. God. Savannah, what are you up to now?
Well, I got some things in mind that I'm trying to accomplish. I got some things that I'm still trying to figure out. But I'm hoping that I'm a pilot or so in the next 5 or so years. That's what that's the next goal. So that's what we're shooting for, fellas.
That's really awesome. And you're in a beautiful area. I love Savannah.
Oh yeah, man. I worked at FedEx for a long time. I mean, for a while. And I just got the experience being around that, you know, the being around planes every day, all day. And you know, talking to the maintenance guys and getting a lot of knowledge and a lot of understanding of what I'm looking at and the things that I could really be doing. Yeah, I don't want to speak on it too much because I ain't really, you know, wanting to just talk it up, but I hope it's in the right direction. That's what we're going with it though.
All right, Coop, I have a plan for you. Okay, after you get your pilot's license, we want the first interview. You come on here and you tell everybody, "Man, I'm a pirate. Not pirate. I'm a pilot." God,
you're already a pirate. Pilot.
That's right. You can actually fly the. That would be cool, wouldn't it, to fly the team?
Hey, so, I wouldn't mind at all, bro. I wouldn't mind at all. That'll pay the bills, man. And I can be around the team again and feel at home again. That wouldn't be bad at all, bro.
No doubt.
Yeah, I can do that, though. I can definitely do that.
All right. So we got that. We'll have the exclusive with Coop. About him being a pilot.
Make sure you lock
that in. We locked it in. Bubba, do you have that? Can you write? let me ask you a question, Coop. How long does it take to become a pilot? I don't even know. I know you have to like log so many hours, right?
Yeah, you have to log. You have to log a lot of hours. It's not very very much to it. But it's pretty expensive. That's the main thing. So it's very expensive to actually be in your flight school classes and things of that nature. But other than that, it doesn't take long. It don't take too long.
This is a true story. I used to want to be a pilot when I was a kid. Right. And there was a video game, like a computer software game back in the '80s. Mm-hmm. I don't know, people that are older watching this, but I was a teenager when it came out, and there were pilots who said the flight simulator was that software was harder to fly on the, you know, the game than it was real life. But it just turned me off. I'm like, this is so hard. I'll be a horrible pilot. So I never went for that dream, but I'm glad that you are. And I'm also glad that you spent a long time with us. We appreciate you so much. And don't be a stranger. We'd love to have you back on again, especially during football season, my friend.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you guys, man. I appreciate you for having me. Looking forward to talking to you guys again about football. Whenever you guys want to talk football, Bubba, give me a nod, man. I'll get back up here. We'll talk some more football, talk some more history. And I'm looking forward to let you guys know when I become a pilot.
Please do, man. I can't wait. Have a good night. Appreciate you.
Hey, great talking to you, Coop.
Thank y'all.
Good luck. Good luck with everything, my friend.
Thank y'all, bro. Appreciate it, man. Y'all have a good one.
Oh, you too. Great pirate there, guys. Matt, how does that's kind of like a brotherhood, I guess, but is it like a fraternity as close as we have? Not that you guys played together, but the fact that you kind of know what they went through, even though it's a different era. But there's got to be like a fraternity, a special pride, pirate pride, knowing that you've what those guys went through.
Yeah, there definitely is. And, you know, this is the first time I've ever had a chance to speak with Fantavious, and we've never met before. But, it's like with all the guys, if we were to meet up in a bar, you know, or a restaurant, you know, you'd probably get caught up for hours talking stories because that. You did. You went through the same things at the same spot, and it's a special experience. And you know, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you just one example is when I had a chance to catch up with Terry Gallagher earlier this season. You know, completely different eras. We'd never met before, but you know, it was great just kind of catching up with him here, hearing his experiences and his stories. So, no doubt about it.
Hey, Matt, the 4 days. You guys had 2-a-days when I was coming through college, and they had 4-a-days.
Yeah. Well, it's always funny. When you talk to the guys who came before you, you always think you had it rough. You know, you think nobody practiced harder than you, nobody worked harder than you, but the guys before you always had it worse. You know, I mean, there's just no doubt about it. So I'm sure Bubba knows, you know, can relate to that too.
Yeah. Now, Matt, did Terry tell you it's all about doing what you can do, not what you can't do?
I didn't hear him say that one, but yeah. I can see it. I can see him saying that.
And trust the process. That's what he was telling us. Trust the process. We, after 3 miserable seasons under Montgomery, trust the process. So we're trusting the process because we have a great coach in Mike Houston and a great coaching staff. I think we're getting heading the right direction. By the way, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but I'm hearing, in case Pirate Nation will know a confirmed date, but off the record, if you will, we're hearing that the spring game could be Saturday, April the 9th. So that's what I'm hearing right now. And again, there's no confirmation on that. We will confirm it when we hear it officially. But those people that are like Matt Simmons that like to get down here and to be here, then we certainly want to give them a leg up, a heads up for sure. But guys, I want to get your thoughts on that's why Kyle's tablet unfortunately died, so we're going to miss him for the rest of the show. But I just want to get your thoughts before we go on. We had the news we heard from Gilbert that good news that the AAC is paying for the cost of our bowl trip of $400,000. Pretty nice thing by the league. Congratulations. Appreciate kudos to Mike Oresco, the commissioner of the league, and all the folks there in Texas.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think that's a great thing. First of all, it eases the burden on East Carolina. It's a very unfair position to be put in where all of a sudden, you know, you think you're going to a bowl game and then you wind up in debt, right? So I think that's fantastic. Mike Oresco continues to prove he's a class guy. He's a good commissioner. You know, he wants to do the right thing. At the same time, this might sound funny. I was also a little bothered by it, though, which probably sounds crazy. But I want BC to flip that bill. I want the ACC to pay that bill, you know, because I
felt the same way.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at some point, you know, I'll get over this thing, but I still think Boston College in my heart of hearts could have played that game. I think I will 20 years from now. And they should step forward and say, hey, we get all this ACC TV money. We'll pay that bill for you. That would have been a more fair thing. But all in all, I'm glad it was taken care of, and now we can, you know, move forward.
No question. And, you know, the thing that for that situation, I'll go back to saying, but just the fact that if you don't want to play, I said this to a Pirate fan today at work, met him for the first time, had a Pirate t-shirt, sweatshirt, and my boss and I, who played football with East Carolina, said, hey, I love you have the right colors on. And come to find out, he actually went to Annapolis, was there, and a couple days ahead of time. And of course, then we don't have a game. He's a perfect example of a Pirate that won't get their money back, you know? So not only do I feel bad for the players, but also feel bad for the fans, especially right after Christmas, right? I mean, you don't ever have money to begin with, pretty much. And then right after Christmas, you spend a lot more money than you probably should. We all been there, done that, especially there's Santa Claus, a lot of great things going on during that time. So my heart breaks another fan I met today about that. And just thinking about, heck, I would even go as far as saying that Boston College should pay for all the fans' bills as well. I mean, if you think about it, think about it. People that are working class, middle class, and upper class went to that game, all walks of life. Pirate Nation excited about that. And then the players, I mean, Matt, talk about that, about the fact of imagine being a player. You've worked your tails off. You've had those seniors have been through the worst times in the history of Pirate football, the worst time ever, in my opinion. and since we started 1932 with football. And they finally climbed the mountain. They finally not only could become bowl eligible, but 7-5. And I just, that really hurts. And I tell you one thing, guys, I will say this moving forward is, you want to talk about it, players to be hungry. I think, I know we've had some losses as far as, we'll have another show on that, but as far as personnel, losing some guys going to the draft. But I tell you one thing, these guys, you know, these guys that are on the team now are going to work even harder to make sure they actually get to play in a bowl game coming up in 2022.
Yeah, no doubt. And this is a critical time of the year for this team. What happens over the next month or so in terms of weightlifting. These are critical weeks coming up for this team in the weight room. You know, Big John is kind of licking his chops right now. This is his time of year, right? And he's where he gets these guys ready. And it's the critical time to take that next step. In particular, in my opinion, this is my opinion, my experiences, but players take the biggest leap after their freshman year going into their sophomore year in terms of learning the scheme, learning the concepts, just adjusting to the college game. So a lot of these young guys right now, you get that season behind your belt and now you move forward and you're about to take that next step because you get the weight training under you. You're going to have a chance to go through a spring ball here very soon. And those things make a huge difference. So can't possibly say enough what a critical time this is coming up. And in particular for the offensive line right now, if we want to win a conference championship next year, we have to be improved on the offensive line. And the weight room gains are critical. Having a great spring ball is critical. Getting the new guys like Parker Moore acclimated into the scheme and the system. So it's an exciting time. And yes, to your point, Dave, they're going to be extremely hungry, I would think. And, hopefully we can stay healthy through spring and take that next step.
No question. It'll be really interesting. And Bubba, I know that it's going to be an exciting time as, again, what turned out to be lemons in December, I think will pay big dividends. We have a lot of great players coming back. And, hey, we've got some young guys that can really step up. But before we go, though, I know that we have a big show on Thursday night. Very excited about it. And we have overtime tomorrow night, too.
Yeah, but before we talk about that, as far as the offensive line is concerned, some excellent articles being put out by Steve and I go at hoistthecolors.net in terms of you have a variety of grad transfers from the FCS ranks. The Pirates are bringing to campus, and hopefully we'll land at least one, if not more than one of those guys. Guys from Marist, Dartmouth, and then also trying to recall the third one where he is playing. But I've seen some film, and I think, Matt, you've watched some film on him as well. And I'm pretty impressed with what I saw.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. And we need to get one more of them at least. I think one more is critical.
We have space for all three, Matt?
I believe we do now with the fact that we're going to be losing a few scholarships here. I believe we do. And I think it's critical, though, to get one more because of the fact that we don't know the health yet of some of our guys. You know, we don't know if Bailey Malovich is going to be ready for the fall. We don't know if Vanderlaan, we don't really know his full status. Henderson has been dealing with a nagging back injury now for several years. So hopefully he can, have a great offseason too. But I think it's just critical. We need to get at least one more guy who could step in, not just a depth piece, but a guy who is capable of stepping in and playing big time minutes.
Right. And that's the key, Matt, is that something we've been talking about. We know Mike Houston, he wants to run the football and play great defense. And I feel like you're right, Matt, with and Bubba. The very fact that with the line, the defensive line, we've taken big strides. I think they're working really hard with DB. They're working really hard as far as the defensive side of the ball with linebacker. the one missing link for me right now, guys, Matt, you hit it the nail on the head there, is with the offensive line. We need to put everything we have. And I know we did a good job, I believe, on the recruiting trail this year. We put an emphasis on with this class with the offensive line. But you're right. You can never have enough offensive line, right, Bubba?
Of course. And then in addition to the OL, also wide receiver with the recent news about Tyler Snead. And then looking fairly unlikely that Audio Matosha will be back. And that would not be surprising. You know, you look at it, he'd been out at UCLA for 3 years, and now he's been at East Carolina for the same. So I think he's had the opportunity. I think he may have already completed his master's degree and maybe working on a second master's degree. But
he's going to have his doctorate pretty soon. At this
point. First college football player to complete a doctorate while still playing exhausting his eligibility. But now you do have C.J. Johnson and then Josiah Hatfield, two proven commodities, although not necessarily always consistent, especially for Josiah. So, but a lot of potential there. And then in addition to them, you had some guys that had minimal playing time, but not a whole lot of production there, even though there is some talent. So hopefully some of those guys will develop and come along, as this staff certainly anticipated them coming along when they were brought into the program. But hopefully we can land at least one, if not a couple, of receivers from the transfer portal and feel a little bit better about that position going into this fall.
Yeah, no doubt. And guys, by the way, Axel asked on YouTube, if you have a question tonight on Facebook or on YouTube, you can do so before we get out of here. Axel says, how about the tight end that came from Oklahoma? He's talking about Ryan Jones. Does he have another year? He has one more year, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, he does have.
So you have Ryan Jones and – sorry about that, Matt. Ryan Jones and Shane Calhoun, and the two of them combined for, what, 45 to 50 catches this year?
Yeah, and we're going to have to find up ways to make up for Snead's production. And Ryan Jones is a guy that, as the season went on, we started to target him more and more. And I expect him to have a huge year. You know, he's going to be fully acclimated to this offense. He's going to have the sort of that rhythm down with Holton Ahlers and now with another spring under his belt. So I think he's a guy that's you can split him out. You can do a lot of different things with him. He's versatile. He's going to make up a lot of that production without question.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point, Matt. I think it was Igo that put this out as far as 25% of our targets in the passing game were to Tyler Snead. And so many of those were in those clutch situations on third down, fourth down. You think about that fourth down conversion up at Navy when we were trailing by, 8 points at the time? And Holton just knew he had an option route with Tyler. And he threw it knowing that he was going to be there. And Holton was on his back getting hit right as he was letting the ball go. And he had to go on the pirate crowd to see that it was a touchdown. But it's that relationship that you have with your receivers that only comes to those experiences in the off season, as well as in the game when the bullets are flying. And hopefully Holton will be able to develop that with some of those other guys in addition to Johnson and Hatfield during the offseason.
That's what I was going to say, guys, is that I wanted to – you beat me to it, Bubba, right there. I was going to ask you guys, you and Matt. I tell you, the person right now we need to put on the clock is C.J. Johnson. It's time. What I want him to work on is a heck of a talent, but his emotions are all over the place. If that guy could find a way, and Matt and Bubba help me out because you guys are former football players, to drown out the noise, so to speak, of all – basically the scouting report. All you have to do is talk trash and you rattle the guy, you get in his head. He starts, looks like almost getting a 15-yard penalty, unsportsmanlike, because whatever they're saying, he's getting ready to fight him. But he's a guy that could have a really, really big year if he could work on his the mental game. Don't you think, Custing?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I think that CJ, you know, just my opinion from afar, I mean, coaches obviously are much better to speak on this than me, but, you know, just watching from the stands and on TV, it seemed like CJ improved in that area as the season went on, but maybe still has a little bit of ways to go, but took some strides in that area as far as, you know, letting it go in one ear and out the other, or not getting too emotional when the other team's trying to get under his skin.
Yeah, and it's when you're that emotional, it's hard to play football. I mean, there's a balance between you have to have emotion, you have to play with emotion, but you have to have it at a level where you're under control. And hopefully with another year of maturity, he's a really good kid. He's extremely talented. Hopefully with another year of maturity, he starts to realize that that type of stuff, it doesn't help him, number one. It doesn't help the team. And it's really wasted energy. You're not going to convince – when you throw your hands up in the air and you get upset, you're not going to convince the ref to go back and change that call. It doesn't do you any good. It doesn't do the team any good. It's kind of a maturity thing. And, you know, I think, like, Bubba made a point there. It did seem like as the season went on, he improved in that area. So hopefully – hey, let's hope it's something that's behind him. Yeah. And he's moved on because like you say, Dave, he's a very talented player and we need him. We need him in a big way to be productive.
Think about it, guys. It's Holton's last year and you think about it and CJ would have, let me do the math. He would have even one more year, right? After, is that right? One or two more years after Holton's gone and you probably have Mason Garcia.
Yeah, because CJ was a freshman in 2019. And then obviously he played enough that year that he lost that year. But in 2020, he didn't lose that. And then this season. So yeah, CJ has still a lot of football ahead of him if he chooses to use it. We'll see what he elects to do.
No question. Yeah, he's the kind of guy that – I'm sorry, Matt. I was just going to quickly say – he's the kind of guy that if he could work out the kinks in that part of the game for me, I think he has a shot in the NFL. I really do. He has a lot of raw talent. Whether he does between now and then will be is to be seen. So I'm not one of these guys to hypes up every single player, but he's a special talent, man. If he could just get it together here in the next couple of years, he would have a shot at it. I really believe that.
Yeah, he's got a great frame. He's a big kid. He's got a great catch radius. So he brings those qualities that, you know, they look for at the next level. But like you say, imagine, you know, if NFL corners pick up on the fact that you're emotional like that, they will
get in your ear
the whole game. So he doesn't want that type of thing.
Yeah, no question. And I don't want to sound like I'm negative towards him. I'm saying – you're such a tremendous talent. Find a way to work on that because, my gosh, he could have a huge year. He could be one of the best players of the AAC, not only for our team, but he could be right in there. I don't know. I would say first team, but I could see him being second team, all AAC, something like that for next year. I think he's that good. But we'll have to, that remains to be seen. Obviously, we could argue that. All night. Guys, I'm so excited about football, and it's just January the 11th. We've got basketball tomorrow night. Bubba, I'm very excited about that with the Pirates on the road against Cincinnati. We'll have our overtime tomorrow night right after the game.
Yep, we will tomorrow night, approximately 9:30, and we'll talk about the Pirates and Bearcats, Fifth Third Arena at the Shoemaker Center. That game, I'm trying to you recall if it's, I don't know if it's Plus or maybe it's on ESPNU, but either way, Pirate fans will be able to see it. And Cincinnati last time out, even though it was in a loss at Memphis, knocked down 16 three-pointers. So Pirates are really going to have to defend the arc tomorrow night, and hopefully we'll shoot the ball well like we did up at Temple, just take a little bit better care of the basketball, especially it was really one stretch, and Coach Dooley fed in that 6 minute stretch. And how mind boggling is this that due to five or six turnovers and then some other things that happened, we only got one or two shots in like 5 or 6 minutes.
You were right, Bubba. It's ESPNU tomorrow night. So all the people that think the plus is such a bad thing, hey, if you have a ESPNU, you don't have to say on social media, hey, where's the game? It's ESPNU. And, of course, our good friends, 94.3 The Game, with Jeff Charles and Michael Perry, they do a great job. Coach Perry's been such a tremendous asset and glad to have him for sure. And then, Bubba, one of my fans that will be there on – I wish, Matt, man, I wish you lived closer. We'll be there on Saturday. That Memphis game is going to be huge. We need to pack Williams Arena, Menzies Coliseum. Get your tickets, ecpirates.com, 1-800-DOLL-ECU. Also, something I need to do, I slipped up and just realized before the show, guys, I've got to get my baseball tickets. Priority deadline was yesterday, but you can still get your tickets, right, Bubba?
Yeah, and the priority deadline was yesterday, but you can certainly still order season tickets. I got mine yesterday, and gentleman I spoke with at the ECU ticket office was very helpful, and he said at that point, this was, I guess, midday, we'd already cleared 1,500 season tickets, and the all-time record is, I think he said 1,764 or 1,746, one of those, but that record could very well fall. Hopefully we'll make a push for 2,000.
That would be, oh my gosh, that would be incredible. And I know, Matt, you're the kind of guy, you're such a great Pirate. If you're like, Bubba always talks about how he's jealous because I live 45 minutes from Greenville, so close. But I know, I was talking about you today about the very fact you're going to move down here. And I was talking to a lady at work today about my buddy Matt Semenza. Eventually he's going to, tired of paying those. By the way, the legislators in Connecticut, can you stop like hurting my boy with taxes? I mean, really? Let Vince McMahon, the billionaire, let him pay all the taxes for everybody in Connecticut. Okay.
Yeah. Connecticut is, you know, it's a beautiful state, but it is, in terms of cost of living, high taxes, it's brutal. It's brutal. So I would love to get back down to Greenville someday, Dave. And I'll tell you one thing. If I ever did live in the area, I'm sure I'd have season tickets for everything. I'd probably go to every baseball game. I'd probably go to every basketball game, certainly every football game. So, I'm excited, you know, looking forward to this baseball season. I think it's going to be a great year. Cliff Godwin definitely has it going. So it's great to hear we're selling so many of those season tickets.
Well, hey, Matt, how about the fact that we have a ranking? Perfect Game, I think, had us at 13 preseason. And what was the poll? Which one was it, Bubba? Help me out for number 8 in the country.
Collegiate Baseball.
Collegiate, thank you. I'm drawing a blank here.
Publication out of Arizona.
Yeah, I couldn't think it would save my life, but you did. Thank you, Bubba. You come through time and time and time again. We have overtime. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate you tuning in. And you want to talk about a great Pirate baseball. I learned, thanks to him, he actually sits right behind me in my season tickets. Mark, you're awesome. And I appreciate you watching and listening to the show, watching on YouTube. And please tell your friends how you can subscribe to our YouTube channel and like our Facebook page. We are at The Sports OBJ. You can follow us there. And, of course, on Instagram. Is at the Sports Objective. You're watching, of course, that you can do that. We have TikTok as well at the Sports OBJ. Guys, I'm very excited on Thursday night. One of my broadcasting heroes, and I'm being sincere when I say it, I've been a huge fan since he's been the voice of the Pirates, Jeff Charles, back on the show. So looking forward to that. Is that 8 o'clock, Bubba, on Thursday night?
Correct.
Okay. All right. I did get that right. Good. I definitely need some sleep for sure.
Yeah.
Been a long time.
That's going to be awesome. That's going to be awesome, Dave. I don't think I've seen or talked with Jeff Charles in over 20 years. So I'm looking forward to that. And, one thing I just want to share really quick, Jeff Charles was in the weight room as much as the football team when I was there. He,
he was always in the weight room. So
let me ask you this.
How many play-by-play voices can bench over 300 pounds?
He did 400 at one point in the 90s, I remember, because I tell you what, I told people that he started laughing at me, but I asked how many play-by-play guys can bench over 400 pounds, because he mentioned that to me one time, and we were talking about it, and he said, you know, it's not even close. But I would challenge anybody right now, even Jeff Charles right now today, he's lifting a lot still these days, and we're really proud of him. And he's one of those guys that he is a great announcer, and you would think Jeff is so good, guys, you would think that he had this like monster ego. The thing that I love about Jeff Charles is the man has got a huge heart, and he's a really good guy. Like, I'm being sincere. Like, you work with people in radio. I know you guys haven't, but you can work with people in radio. They're some of the worst people ever, and I'm sorry to say that, but they their egos are horrible. They treat people horrible behind the scenes. That would make a great reality show, is to have radio, because it's that bad. But anyway, Jeff is one of those guys that gives you hope for humanity, and when you make a friend at radio, you've done something. And the coolest thing in the world, guys, and we'll end on this note, is when you make a friend of someone that you've looked up to and you admired for many years. I was a teenager, like 14, 15 years old when Jeff started, and listened to him as a teenager. I was like, man, I wish I could be like him. And then you get a chance to work with him, get to know him. That's the coolest thing in the world. There's nothing better than that, especially to find out that one of your broadcasting heroes is such a good person behind, not only behind the scenes when you're working with them, but also just in general. So looking forward to having the voice on. Very proud of him. And I appreciate him basically making a huge career here in one place in Greenville, North Carolina. Do you guys have anything before we go?
Hey, just looking forward to some big basketball games this week. And now, Dave, because you mentioned spring ball, now you got me thinking about football again, man. So it never stops.
You know, but I'm that way, my friend. You know what? I was sad with the game this morning. It dawned on me. I said, I'm very happy for Georgia. But I was like, oh, my God, I don't have college football now for the longest time. And by the way, NC State, you're on the clock. We're coming after you. You're going to have to come to Greenville, and you're going to have to, Dave Doran, you're going to have to, like, get used to this. Yes, we're going to start trash talking, because I believe in Mike Houston. And NC State's a good team, great recruiting. Good coach, but guess what? We have Mike Houston, and I'm looking forward to that Labor Day weekend. Guys, get your season tickets, please. ECUPirates.com, 1-800-ECU. Do that for baseball, but get ready to do your football tickets here pretty soon. Looking forward to it. Oh, my goodness. Top 25. NC State top 10. Really? Really? Don't give me – just like Carolina this year, right, guys? Carolina, yeah, yeah. You know, they're such a great – you saw the big bowl game they were in. But anyway,
it's going to last about 1 week for NC State. That top 20, that top 10 ranking, it's going to last about 1 week.
Yep. Just come to Greenville. Come to Greenville, baby. Anyway, that's going to be fantastic. All right. We'll reminisce later, and looking forward to that. Matt, thank you, man, so much. You're the best. Bubba, appreciate you, man. You're awesome. Appreciate everything you do for the show, for sure. We're going to get out of here. And we're going to call it a night. We'll put this podcast to bed. For Coop, Ventavious Cooper, for Cal from LaGrange Barber, Matt Semenza, Bubba Rosenbaum, I am Dave Richmond. Thank you, everybody. Good night. And as always, go Pirates.